Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to playwright and filmmaker David E. Taubert about his new Netflix project, Jingle Jangle. Jazz vocalist Brenda Nicole Moore talks about her new project, The Marrow. And visual artist and activist Fabian Williams is here to chat about his Colin Kaepernick murals and much more. We'll also be playing the music of Motown, which turns 60 years old this year. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Central Casting is looking for men and women of all ethnicities and between the ages of 20 to 50 to portray judges, press, and photographers at a boxing event for the upcoming pilot, UMBP. You must own your own suit and have clean-cut, professional look. Shooting will take place on February 12th in Atlanta College Park area. If this is you, please submit your name, number, sizes, and a current photo to pilot@centralcasting.com. with Tues Suits, that's T-U-E-S Suits, in the subject line of the email. In other related entertainment news, check out the first official trailer for Shaft, starring Jesse T. Usher, Samuel L. Jackson, and Richard Roundtree. JJ, a.k.a. John Shaft Jr., is a cybersecurity expert trying to uncover the truth behind his best friend's untimely death. However, he needs an education in crime fighting that only his dad, the legendary John Shaft, can provide. Go to WCLK.com to watch the trailer. And finally, in theaters this weekend is What Men Want, starring Taraji P. Henson. It is a remake of the Mel Gibson classic What Women Want and follows a sport agent who gains the power to read men's thoughts and how she uses her new power to gain an advantage over her male counterparts. Go to WCLK.com and watch our upfront red carpet interview with her and the film's producers, Will Packer and James Lopez. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by Fusion Chamber Ensemble presenting the Joy of Love concert on Sunday, February 17th at 5 p.m. at the Emory Performing Arts Studio. Performances by Karen Banks, Aida Chamber Ensemble, and Gerald Freeman's Jazz Ensemble for an evening of musical exploration from Rachmaninoff, Block and Still to the music of Gershwin and Marvin Gaye. The concert will showcase expressions of love through many styles of music and spoken word. Ticket information is available at Eventbrite or FusionConcertATL.com.
Cassie Davis here. You're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius. Take it away, Ray!
My first guest is acclaimed playwright and filmmaker David E. Taubert. He's teaming up with John Legend and Netflix for a new project titled Jingle Jangle. Taubert talked exclusively to Upfront about his search for the next child star and more.
Well, I started writing this years ago and came to Netflix with it, and they loved it, and it is the first live action musical that Netflix has ever done. So it's a big musical, set in a cobblestone town, and it's starring Forest Whitaker, and also produced by John Legend, who's writing some of the music along with Phil Lawrence, who's a member of Bruno Mars. So I mean, it's this big musical. And it's going to be shooting over here in London, England. So I wanted to give opportunity to, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, but I do a lot of acting workshops.
And
where I always try to discover new talent.
Yeah.
So I wanted to give opportunity to discover a young black girl, 9 to 13, who can sing and dance and act and bring her over to the United Kingdom to shoot this movie.
Wow. And, you know, when I saw the advertisement for this, I immediately thought about Stephanie Mills back in the day when she originated the role of Dorothy in The Wiz on Broadway. And I was like, wow, this is kind of similar in the sense that you're looking to find the next big talent between the ages of 9 and 13. What exactly are you going to be looking for in this character that is named Journey, I believe, right? Is that her name?
Well, just a bright-eyed little girl. And, you know, in our community, there's so much talent. There's so much just attitude and charm and sweetness and all of that. So I'm looking for everything that black girls are. I'm looking for young black girl magic.
Right.
To discover somebody and put them in a major film.
Wow. Now, you mentioned that this is the first time that Netflix has done this type of a live action musical. How did you convince them to do this, I should say?
Well, you know, it's an area that I've been Almost Christmas was a great project for me. And so it's just a space I love. I've done musical theater for 25 years, of course. So it's kind of a natural progression. I've always been wanting to do something where music was incorporated. So, you know, it's kind of like a natural progression. So everybody was all in. They loved the idea. And here we are.
Yeah. So let's go back over some of the just basic rules. You're looking for a young woman who can sing, who can dance, an exceptional performer. And this is all, again, you said you're shooting this over in London, England. And you got to be available March through August of 2019. That's when the rehearsals and the filming will take place. How can someone get their information to you?
Well, they should send a photo and a short clip of them singing to jinglejanglecasting@gmail.com.
Okay.
jinglejanglecasting@gmail.com. And you know, our casting directors are going to suss through all that stuff. And those that we feel, have the potential, we're going to set them up with an audition.
Wow, amazing. Again, David E. Tauber, yeah, Thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. If you're interested in this role of Journey, again, the email address is jinglejanglecasting@gmail.com. And you must be available to do this between March and August of 2019. David E. Tauber, thanks so much. And we look forward to this.
Thanks, Ray.
All right.
Seeking its level, only to become a huge river destined to the sea. Yes, there's a place for us somewhere, a place for us. Hold my.
This is Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My next segment features jazz vocalist Brenda Nicole Maurer. The Atlanta-based actress and producer is collaborating with pianist Kenny Banks Jr. and acclaimed composer Troy Miller for a new concept jazz album titled The Marrow. She stopped by Upfront to chat about the ambitious endeavor and the film project that will accompany the album.
I wanted to do something bigger than myself. I feel like a lot of times as an artist, especially if you're an indie artist, you're constantly self-promoting all the time. And I don't really like being the center of attention. Like, I love performing, but the spotlight is not the thing I'm seeking. I really want to highlight the music and the artist. So I wanted to do a project that wasn't just about me, that it was about a collective of people coming together to make something incredible. And because I'm a millennial, all of my jazz artist friends are millennials too. And they're incredible. So I decided to bring them all together under the direction of Troy Miller, who has produced for Gregory Porter, Lauren Vola, Jacob Collier. He's led the London Symphony Orchestra. He did that album with Lauren Vola, the Metropole Orcfest album. So incredible. So I didn't even know him personally. I looked at the people that I liked in their music, and I saw who produced it, and it was him. And I reached out to him. I told him my idea. I told him what I wanted to do, and he's like completely on board with it. So I'm super excited about that. And then I'm co-writing with Kenny Banks Jr., who is, I mean, we've both been in Atlanta on the scene in jazz for a while now, but Kenny is really like coming into his own right now. He's a finalist for one of the most prestigious piano awards you can possibly get. And we've been working together for about 8 years, actually. My last album, we co-wrote a lot of stuff on that album too. But this album is definitely exploring more jazz. And I think jazz is one of those things that we need to preserve and needs to keep going. So it's my generation of people and, you know, the future generations that's going to keep it going. So I wanted to bring everyone together to explore and create new jazz.
Yeah. Now, the title, The Marrow, mm-hmm. explain that, because we were talking about that offline, but there's an interesting
background to it. When Kenny and I first started writing, I came up with like this little diddly on the guitar, and we just started jamming out and playing. And what it felt like, I always write music based off what it feels like for me. So it just felt like really grounded, like rooted, like the core of who you are. And so it made me think of bone marrow, which is where all of your essence comes from, makes up who you are. And so we, since it was the first song we created, we decided to call the album The Marrow, to represent your inner self, the core of who you are. So a lot of the songs that I've written talk about self-discovery, being true to yourself, coming into your own, claiming the person that you are. Yeah.
There's a film aspect to this as well, which yes. I thought was just so, so cool.
Yeah.
And this is not necessarily a documentary, but this is actually going to be a drama, correct?
It's a short film,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's still being written, but the idea is to merge film and music together so that it's one in the same. Multifaceted art piece is what this is, basically. I didn't want to just do a music video because I felt like it needed to have more gravitas than that. I needed it to impact people in a greater way than just like, oh, that was a cool music video. So the short film is also about self-discovery. And because I'm a woman, it's from a woman's point of view. but yeah, I'm still writing the short film part. The music is already completed. And I'm going to be looking for a director soon to shoot the short film. And yeah, it'll be one and the same. The music will be basically the score for the short film.
Yeah. Well, Brenda Nicole Moore, thank you so much for being a guest today
on
Upfront. And again, we're really excited about this project. Always excited for just this continuation of great jazz music and the legacy of jazz. I think that's one of the things that we try to do here is mm-hmm. is leverage that legacy through WCLK, through the music that we play and also through the programs that we have. And this, no doubt, is something that we definitely want to get behind and support. So
Definitely
say bravo to you on this. To get more information about The Marrow and to find out where Brenda is going to be performing next in the city, go to WCLK.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Oh, once I can see, this is mine, you can't take it. Long as I know I have love, I can make it. Oh, once in my life, I have someone who needs me. Hey, yeah. Oh,
hi, this is Ian LeVan Zan, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment features visual artists Fabian Williams, Nelson Nels Guzman, and Ash Nash. The trio stopped by to talk about Williams recreating murals of NFL player Colin Kaepernick after his popular mural of the sports star was taken down the Friday before Sunday's big game. The incident went viral and sparked a lot of social media dialogue about art, activism, and Atlanta. So if you've been living under a rock, you totally missed the situation that took place a couple of days, a day before the Super Bowl, where Fabian's artwork, this beautiful mural of NFL player Colin Kaepernick, that was located right there at Joseph E. Lowry and Fair Street. Mural's been up there for, 2-3 years?
2 years.
Yeah. And it was demolished.
and a video was circulating of these guys tearing this building down hours before the big game on Sunday, this past Sunday. And it left so many people wondering, why now? You know, and was this in retaliation to, you know, this protest against this game that was taking place in our city? And, you know, your artwork. So let's go back to the very beginning. What made you decide to do the mural in the first place and that particular building as well?
Well, when I'm riding through the West End, I always pass that building. It's just like this big white building. And I used to always see, like, you know, just album advertisements. And, you know, it was really just like just a blank canvas. There was a couple little bit of graffiti on it. But really, like, it was just unkept and just sitting there. And around the time, Colin Kaepernick, it was obvious that he wasn't going to get picked up. So I was like, I decided to, like, start a campaign to, like, say, hey, you know, Atlanta could use him because of our civil rights legacy and what Martin Luther King did and Ralph David Abernathy and Hosea and
of which Coretta. You have painted, you know, several murals of these icons, James Baldwin, MLK, Coretta, right, around the city. So it was perfect. It was a perfect fit.
Yeah. So I'm like, he represents what's happening right now. He's a contemporary activist. We spend so much energy reflecting on the past, but it's like, well, what about the people that are doing it now? So I was like, this would be a good opportunity to, like, to make the case where, well, nobody wants him in the country, bring him here because this is the perfect place for him. As, like, you know, he's kind of like an icon at this point. He reminded me of Muhammad Ali, which is why I later put him up there, like, maybe a year later. And I was like, well, you know, he should be on the Falcons, the Atlanta Falcons. This would be the perfect team for him. So I drew the picture of him first in the Falcons uniform, like, as a watercolor drawing, which is actually at Kylan Gallery now, by the way. Kylan Gallery. So I kept telling my friends, I was like, yo, I'm going to paint a mural of Kaepernick on this building. And they was like, okay, cool. So really I was saying it to, like, hype myself up because I had never went up and painted somebody's property. You know what I mean?
So, do you usually get permission or do you just do it?
Nah, I just do it.
Okay.
But it's no, I used to.
Okay.
Because I'm, anyway.
Yeah.
He's so, a changed man.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a calculated, you know, guess. I'm like, if you're going to let this building sit, and I watched it, like, I let it sit for a few months. I was, like, riding past, just checking to see what it's like. I ride past at night, see if anybody's doing anything. It was like, it's obvious and wasn't nobody messing with
it. No, so. I mean, to me, it was one of those things that, you know, people would pass by and take pictures and be like, yo, this is dope. And I think you even put a Black Panther next to him.
T'Challa.
Yeah, so you had these amazing figures right here in the West End. We'd see it on the way coming to Clark Atlanta University. If you were traveling, like you said, through the West End, you saw these images. So it just kind of became part of the landscape.
Mm-hmm. So when last Friday, I got a call from a friend of mine named Keisha Smith, who owns Marty's, which is a co-op kitchen on Fair Street. And I was working on a mural on that building. So NPR was there interviewing her, and they asked me to come down. So I'm driving down Joseph Lowry to get to Fair Street and make a left. And when I was driving up, I saw the building with, you know, like the wall that's facing Joseph. And when I get to the light, as I'm pulling past the wall, I see, like, bricks, like, laying on the ground, and the bulldozer, like,
thump, thump, thump.
Wow. So literally, it was being demolished as your work was being demolished right before your very eyes.
Right. And I was on the phone with Ash. Ash briefed me, you know, about the interviews. And I, you know, I was like, it's gone. Oh, they destroyed the building. They destroyed the building. She was like, what are you talking about?
So, Ash, let me ask. You're working with Fabian. You're his publicist. You're kind of all of, you know, manager, all of this. What was going through your mind in terms of, oh, my God, my client's work is being destroyed?
Well, it was interesting because we were just there the Thursday before interviewing with the BBC, who had came down from the U.K., and we chose that building versus his other St. Kaepernick that's on Ralph David Abernathy and People Street.
Okay.
So when we were there, we noticed that there was like barbed wire and like caution tape, and there was one cone, but the barbed wire was just out there. Like kids could have just, and it was just so like, well, that's really weird because we'd never seen nothing like that. And I kind of like, I'm a very intuitive person, so I was just like, you know, kind of mental note.
Yeah.
So when he told me, it was like, I didn't believe it, but I believed it because it was just like, but why? And, you know, like who would, this is the first day of Black History Month, you know?
And you've had all this time, in a sense, to really, I mean, it's been there for quite some time. You've had all this time. If you really wanted, I mean, you could have knocked the building down last year. I mean, you know.
They could have knocked it down 6 months ago when it caught fire.
Yeah, right.
By the way, it caught fire.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, there's all kind of other dilapidated buildings out there.
Yeah.
I want to go back to that, Nels, and we'll come back to you. It caught fire. Yeah, was that kind of mysterious as well?
That was weird, you know, because the hype for Super Bowl has been, ever since they announced it, like, it's been like, there's been like this steady build to like, the Super Bowl's coming.
Yeah.
You know, so like when it caught fire, I was like, figures.
Yeah.
But I thought they were going to like knock demolish it down at that it time. Like right after that. And it just stayed there.
And so, Nels, your thoughts? I mean, you're a fellow artist as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I've gone around the city and I've looked at other places, and sometimes I have friends that paint like abandoned buildings, so I know that all throughout Atlanta, there's a whole bunch of buildings that are in way worse shape, way more dangerous shape, and for them to pick that one to knock out down at that particular time, I think, was a little telling.
Mm. Wow. So the building is gone. It's rubble now. At what point did you say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and just paint Kaepernick all over the city of Atlanta, because you decided on several different locations now to put up different murals of him. I wouldn't say in retaliation, but it's kind of in response to what just happened to your original piece.
Well, it really wasn't my idea. It was actually Ash's idea.
Okay. Okay.
Ash, I was mad and depressed, and it was late, and I, you know, we had been talking about all day, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I was like, you know, I got to repaint it again, but it's like, it's got to be like bigger, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was gonna try and find a building where I could, you know, paint them like 40 feet tall or something, you know what I'm saying?
So Ash, how did you put this into action?
So yeah, it was a really odd day. We had did the Nike mural over at the Westside Cultural Arts Museum and
art center.
And Russell Wilson had actually, you know, he took all these pictures, and he was, you could tell he was like feeling the wall, and I was like, yeah. So we were kind of like happy about that, but then it was like, it was just a bizarre day because the building had been torn down, but then the Nike mural was getting so much love. And so the day kind of, everyone was just kind of in a blur, you know, in a funk. And the day went on and it just hit me, and I was like, you know what? We should just drop a whole bunch of Kaepernicks just sitting around the stadium, just like staring at the stadium. But, you know, in the perimeter. So I was, you know, I text Fabian. This is in the evening. And I text him. I'm like, hey, call me.
And this is Saturday.
Friday.
This is Friday. Friday, yeah. Okay. I was like, call me. Couldn't get in touch. And I was like, man, I'm going to just do it. So I reached out to a bunch of like the guerrilla style street artists. And was like, yo, I need y'all to have his back on this because he's, you know, with a street arts background, y'all need to be family, you know. And so this is how it gets handled. So I had already kind of put the play in motion and just to drop really like 30, I think it was like 30 some caps all around the stadium. So everyone was like, cool. You know, they were like, yeah, we got him.
But you decided on 7.
Yeah, well, yeah, I woke up and Ash called me. Oh, actually, I called Ash, and she was like, okay, you ready? I got it. We're going to get 30-something murals across the city. And I was like, yeah, that's a great idea, but, you know, what I'm not trying to do is be responsible for, like, you know, all these different buildings being painted on, which is, you know, basically they'll be vandalized, and I'll be responsible because I'm the one that said, you know, paint these murals. So I was like, we got to get permission first. And one of the first people I thought of was Nels, because this is like probably the third time my stuff has been painted on or vandalized or demolished.
Right.
And I actually, the first time it happened, I actually thought it was Nels. And like I went and like I think did I put you on blast?
We had a little back and forth initially wow. about it. Yeah. Wow.
So Nels, when you got the phone call, what went through your mind?
I thought it was a great idea. I thought I think like one of the first thoughts that came to my head was almost like a hydra, you know, like if you cut off one of its heads then it grows several more. Mm-hmm. So I thought this was a perfect opportunity, you know, to speak up and say that there's really nothing that they can do to really silence our activism through our art, you know, because if they do try that, then the first thing that we're going to do is find another avenue to come back even harder.
And it looks like a lot of businesses volunteered themselves for this project. I mean, again, I saw a lot of this being played out on Instagram, and shout out to Kimmy Bennings because she hit me up that Saturday and I was like, I was supposed to give her a call back and I finally caught up with her and I was like, Kimmy, I know why you're calling me. She was like, no, I'm calling about something else. But yeah, let's talk about that as well, because I saw it being played out. Folks were really upset and angry that this was taking place, and then businesses started stepping up. So where can people see these murals?
Well, Krog Street is the first one.
Okay.
I don't know them in order off the top of my head, but Cafe 640 West in the West End.
That's mine.
Yeah, that's nails it. Okay. A beautiful piece there.
Thank you.
Sorry, let me think. There's also Urban Sprouts Farms. Ziggy Tupaya did a beautiful cap piece, and he's he's Nigerian, so the way he incorporated is just like, wow. There is 400 Northside. That's actually where Fabian put the first one.
Okay.
Thank you, Fabian. Mission Development LLC, and that's 1650 Jonesboro Road. We plan on definitely doing some more work back there.
Okay.
And then also Tim Barrett Designs in off right around the corner from the Krog Tunnel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you heard from Kaepernick?
We've been talking to his people.
I think he posted.
He's been showing a lot of love to everyone. Yeah.
He's been liking. He's been, you know, he's been active on social media with like the new post. He actually just liked the I guess the Usually Mathurin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mathurin. Usually Mathurin's Kaepernick mural at 1650 Jonesboro Road.
I have to ask, what has been the biggest lesson that you learned from this, all of this? Because this is all happening within a matter of, 24 hours. You had the game on Sunday. What did you, Fabian, the artist, walk away with from all of this?
I mean, I think I realized like the power of, an artistic protest. I did not see it, all this happening. It was more so I was like, Atlanta cannot let this happen. And I also learned that people are like really dying to do something that feels righteous. You know, the people that came out were just like really eager to be a part of it and be on the right side of history. And so, with knowing that now, a lot of the different initiatives that me and Ash have been talking about for what, like the last year, mm-hmm. we're like, we see a clear path to making those happen.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people will give their best effort to be a part of it, because we really do want to live up to the legacy that, has came before us. There's like new roads to pave. So now it's like knowing that, it's wide open.
Yeah.
The way we see it.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, David E. Taubert, Brenda Nicole Moorer, Ash Nash, Nels Guzman, and Fabian Williams. I'd also like to thank Reva Blue, the voice of Casting Buzz, and my engineer, Jami Wellman. Upfront is produced by WCLK 91.9. Please join us next Saturday, February 16th, for another edition of Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, Inside Atlanta's Entertainment Industry has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.